lovely man. I love his voice as well, and so does Julie, who's joining me in the studio today, along with Mike. Mike, let's start with you. First of all, he talked there, Mr. Pickles talked about Bethel and Hospital, etc. What's your view on what he just said there?
Well, I think, unusually, I did agree with part of what he said, because it was quite clear, and I think he was right, that when Basildon was put into special measures, things were improving. There has been a lot of problems at Basildon Hospital, and you can't underplay, you know, what has happened there. A lot of families have had some real problems because of the care that was provided. But, as I say, he was right, because the I went to the board of directors meeting, which was happening on the Wednesday, straight after they were put into special measures on the Monday. And someone asked the question of Claire Panicker, the new chief exec there, what special measures would entail. And they didn't know, because they hadn't had any contact up till then with from the government. So the whole thing, from my perspective, what I saw the previous weekend was a Conservative attack on Andy Burnham and Labour about the, you know, the terrible things that had happened in Basildon. The announcement on Monday about putting it into special measures, when already, as Mr. Pickles just said, they were already looking at those issues and trying to turn them around. So they have come out of special measures now. I'm sure there's still things in place to look at what they're doing. But it was a bit of a cheap party political shot, really.
I almost feel sorry for not only Basildon, but for Queens as well. I think they're overwhelmed almost, because you could say Basildon, well, we used to have Orsett A&E, that's gone. Queens, they've shut King George's in Ilford. So these hospitals have just been overwhelmed, and it just seems to be they're becoming under pressure when they've got enormous, you know, they've doubled their input virtually. You know?
Absolutely, Mike. I mean, one of the broken promises from the Tories when they were campaigning in the general election was to protect the NHS, and it was safe in our hands, and we've lost 6,000 nurses. There's problems recruiting new staff, and that's having an effect on morale and on the workload of the staff that are there. There's going to be problems.
Absolutely. Right, before we talk general politics, let's turn over to Julie, and you were at council last night. Let's talk Brentwood Council. What happened? Anything exciting?
Oh, it was over the scrutiny. Sorry, it was over the scrutiny. I wasn't speaking into the mic.
Yeah.
It contained some of the key performance indicators, so we got feedback on how the council's performing, and its targets set by the council. So mm-hmm. they set their own targets, and then unbelievably don't meet those targets and refuse to modify those targets.
And this is with the new chairman in place, I take it?
This was with the new
chairperson. Chairperson.
New chair.
New chair.
Yeah. And who... she was very firm, I felt, but there were an awful lot of discrepancies and problems with the process. There were queries on how things were going to be fed back, where things had disappeared to, recommendations that had been made, motions that had been passed at the last overview and scrutiny that just disappeared into the ether. It was embarrassing.
It was a shambles.
We keep hearing that word, don't we? And Eric, to be fair to him, said when I said to him the question about being filmed, etc., that he thinks it's a good thing, and he thinks also that it should go wrong, because it does go wrong.
It does, but he said waltz and all. But it's hard to, you know, it's all waltz and no all at Brentwood Borough Council. It's absolutely atrocious the way the council's being run internally and externally. There was people from the LGA there yesterday as well. We've been doing a peer review of the services. We've heard, I mean, it's even got as far as Westminster, how terrible Brentwood Council is being run at the moment. Last night, a lot of it boiled down to a lack of skill set within the current staff team. And I'm not blaming the officers one bit, because when I was first elected 6 years ago, we had a full complement of staff who had been there for a long time, who knew the town inside out, had all the skills. Decisions to cut staff, to outsource, to try and turn Brentwood Borough Council into a commissioning council and not into a public service has been an absolute disaster, and now we're filling gaps. We're paying people more to fill gaps than we were paying in the first place when we had a full complement.
I looked at an interview that you and I did a couple of years ago, when the night of the election, and I asked you the question, do you think, because you're in a minority party in Brentwood Council, can you make a difference? And you said, yes, I think I can. And do you think you have?
I do. Mm. I do. I think we've done really well. We've had great successes like getting the changing places toilet for people with disabilities in the High Street.
Saving the town hall.
I mean, that was swung on two votes. But so you could say, you know, if we had voted the other way, we wouldn't have a town hall anymore.
And we did the march, you know, we did the...
Yeah.
I mean, that was largely our work.
Absolutely. You know. Julie organised that march to make sure that the council were in no doubt what the general public, especially the local residents that live in our ward, because the town hall's in Brentwood South, thought about the idea that they were going to either demolish or turn the town hall into flats. So I think we've done a lot in our time as, I was on my own for a couple of years, Julie's back, and hopefully we'll be back to three. At least next May.
Yeah, I mean, next May, should you be elected, then you're going to be looking for a new leader, aren't you?
Well, I might not be looking for a new leader. I might be the leader.
You might be the leader, exactly.
Well, I've got another I've got another year to go. I've got till 2015. Mm. So next year we're hoping to elect Gareth, who's our candidate for Brentwood South, and then there'll be three of us again. Mm. And then... Then we're into my final year.
Okay, I think you'll miss part of that, won't you?
I will, because I was born in Brentwood. I was born in my ward in Brentwood South on Shenfield Common when it was the Brentwood Community Hospital.
Was born on the Common.
Yeah, born in the Common, 1964.
Scott, and it's a massive piece of our heart, Brentwood South. It's amazing how much.
Yeah, well, it's the best ward. It is the best ward in Brentwood.
Of course, it is. Right, let's bring you up to date on the news items that have developed this morning. David Cameron in the Commons this morning has defended the so-called bedroom tax, following claims it's forcing disabled people to cut down on food and heating. 50 leading charities claim carers and families of disabled children are being forced deeper into debt and falling behind on rent. During Prime Minister's questions, Mr Cameron insisted his spare room subsidy policy is right.
People in private sector rented accommodation who get housing benefit don't get a subsidy for spare rooms, whereas people in council houses do get a subsidy for spare rooms. That's why I think it was right to end that, and it's right to end it thinking of the 1.8 million people in our country on housing waiting lists.
You both were tutting through that, so who wants to start?
Oh, I'll start.
Go on then.
I've worked with people with disabilities, and I don't think I was ever aware as I am now, today, following the meeting last night, following the peer review last night, and hearing that, of the chasm between my political ideologies, my morals, if you like, my beliefs, and the beliefs and the ideologies of the Conservatives. I cannot believe somebody would think that's a good thing.
This reminds me almost of the poll tax, and a commentator once said, and I had to agree with him, that the poll tax was basically a good idea, but it was put so badly, and it was constructed so badly, that it was rejected. Is this the same thing, that the bedroom tax, basically it's the right idea, but it's the way it's built,
it just offends everybody and causes
great hardship?
I think people should have had a conversation with people about... You have a spare room, what do you use it for? You know, a conversation. Some people are living in houses they can't cope with. Some people don't go upstairs. They shut off upstairs and they live downstairs.
Yeah.
Those people maybe could have a sensitive conversation with people. But to just inflict it on everybody, some people I work with, they use their spare room for carers to stay over. They use it for their equipment, their wheelchairs, their mobility scooters. And to treat people in that way, to say things like that to people, is just the most vulnerable in our society, to treat people who are the most vulnerable, and to give people tax, whatever he's done to richer people, just defies my belief.
And if Labour government came in 2015, would that be scrapped day one?
We've already made a pledge to do that, and Julie's right. I mean, it's the disproportionate effect on people with disabilities is incredible. We've spoke to people who would be quite willing to, if it is a spare room, I mean, there's a question mark over a perceived spare bedroom, and as Julie says, you know, sometimes they're used for all different manner of things. They're not actually spare rooms just because you've got two bedrooms, but people that we've spoke to have been willing to downsize if there was somewhere available. But Brentwood has not got the properties available for people to do that. And what they're finding in Brentwood is people haven't been, in inverted commas, incentivised enough by having their benefits cut to move. So I'm really worried, because I can see the Tories turning the screw on people even more to try and fall. They were trying to sort of force some sort of social movement, weren't they, either into smaller properties, which there aren't any, or out the borough altogether and become someone else's issue. It hasn't worked. Also, people have lived in those houses for up to 40, 50 years. Especially in Brentwood South in Airwold, the two estates were built in the 50s. Some people have lived there for a long, long time, and they shouldn't be shouldn't have to pay the tax. Sometimes families have succeeded their mum and dad's houses, so they're still within the bracket where they'd have to pay. What about the communities? What about the friends at school that come and stay over, and the neighbours and all that sort of support that just goes? Someone I knew, she's now living in Chelmsford in the middle of nowhere because she had to go because she couldn't afford it. And she was lived in Brentwood all her life, living near Brentwood Station. Now she's in a rural area that she doesn't know.
Okay, back in a moment. We're talking about everything political this morning, and I'll be talking to you about crime in just a moment. Meanwhile, it's 22 minutes past one. Back in a moment.
Thank you. Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Indeed it is. 1-2-3 with Mike Jones. It's actually 1-2-3 as we speak. That is the time. I've got my guests in the studio, Mike Le Cerf and Julie Morrissey. And Mike is the new, well, I say new, we've known for some while now, the new PPC for, what's contested as one of the key areas in the country. Baselland is always an early result, and it's always a very important result. You're in a seat that's... changes hands. Very, very, very marginal. We had the excellent Angela for several years. Stephen Metcalfe is in power at the moment in Baselland. You must have been very, very pleased to have been elected. I know you're up against extremely good competition in John Kent. So let's turn your microphone back up.
Yeah.
That's pretty good work, Mike.
Oh, thanks. I was really delighted. I really, because it's the constituency next door to Brentwood and Ongla. I've known Angela really well for quite a few years. I know the area really well. Angela was the local girl, and I'm the bloke next door, and I was delighted that Angela supported my campaign, and I went on to win the selection.
I was with her when she first found out that she was in your position, that she was PPC several years ago, and when with her the night she got elected as well. And obviously, Fire Minister, that's something that just reminded me, Fire Minister, I wanted to come on to. You've been seen to support the fire service in their strikes recently as well. We've had FBU members in here talking about the hardship about their pensions. Can you just briefly give me what your view on what happened?
Yeah, sure. I mean, me and Julie were happy to go out on the picket line a couple of weeks ago at Basildon and stand out with the ladies and gents of the fire station because, what's happening is their pensions are being, decimated, really, and the issue around them having to, wait 13 years to, from the current retirement age to 68 to get their pension, an absolute disgrace. But the terms and conditions changing as well so drastically. I don't know about everybody else, but if there's a fire in your house, you want a fit team of firefighters to turn up as soon as possible and put it out, and to try and push the age level up to the retirement age of most other people seems ridiculous.
If you'd like to join us on the programme today, you can via Twitter, the Mike A. Jones, or you can use our Phoenix FM app as well. Let's very quickly, just before the news headlines, let's talk about crime, because again in the news at the moment, if you look at Thurrock's crime figure on burglaries, unsolved in Thurrock is 94%, in Harlow 86%. I don't know what it is for Brentwood, I don't know what it is for Baselland, but I expect it's a similar trend. Why is this happening, Mike?
Well, it's cuts again, isn't it? I mean, 20% police cuts as soon as the government came in has taken its toll, and it's taken its toll on the crimes that people in Essex are experiencing every day. Theresa May is a great one for saying, police should be policing. They're obviously finding that very difficult with the cuts in police numbers, police on the street. The report that's just come out, the Stevens report, is very clear about... prevention and making sure there's a presence on the street. I was at a meeting in Pitsea recently with the two PCSOs that cover the area, lots of local residents and a police officer, and they are chasing their tails, really. I mean, we were talking about bringing in a no drinking zone for Pitsea because the issue has got so bad with a lot of people drinking on the streets and causing a few problems. It's not been dealt with, it's not been nipped in the bud, so it's just escalated, and then you have to turn to drastic measures. So it's not the police's fault. They, you know, they are doing the best job they can with the limited resources that they've got. Crime's bound to go up, and when the streetlights go out, we'll know what's going to happen, but it seems like those in power are willing to take a chance.
If there was a Tory MP or PPC in the studio today, they would say, well, that's your fault, that's Labour's fault, because it's what you left us. But are we past that now?
I think so. After more than 3 years, it's, you know, the old argument about, you know, we inherited Labour's mess, it wasn't true anyway. There was a global banking crisis that affected the whole world, but the Tories managed to latch onto that while we were going through our selecting our new leader back in 2010, and that stuck to a certain extent. But I think after 3 years, you've got to hold your hands up and say the things that the coalition, let's not let the Lib Dems off the hook as well, the coalition government said would be happening now are not happening, and we're spending more than ever on welfare because of the lack of jobs. Labour had a plan. We had a plan for cuts, but we had a plan for investment, and we had a plan to do it at a more gradual level.
But you surely must put your hand up, and you did get things badly wrong. The Labour government, the Blair government, got things wrong, didn't it? It got things right, but it got things wrong. I mean, there was a massive amount of public money wasted. There were quangos. I'll just give you an example. The fire central control. I can't even tell you what the bill for that is. £430 million of total waste of money for a project that John Prescott started. And I'm going to use a very, very crude word here because I'm going to say it was a pissing contest. And it was. But I shouldn't say that, right, but it was. But it was between the FBI, Andy Gilchrist, the FBU leader, and John Prescott.
Yeah, sure.
And it was a waste of public money, and we're still paying for that now. And it just seems that, you know, Labour's biggest critics will always say, you've wasted money in the past. Are you learning those lessons and not repeating those mistakes that you made in the past?
Yeah, but, you know, people have got to weigh it out, haven't they, Mike? I mean, there's arguments for and against, but I would hold my hand on my heart and say I would prefer there to have been a Labour government from 2010 to deal with the global banking crisis, because actually at that time there was a slight upturn anyway because of the stuff that Gordon Brown was doing, and we didn't get the opportunity to see that through. But we built schools, we built hospitals, and one of the great things we did was improve the standards of all the council housing and make sure there was new roofs and new windows and new kitchens and bring all the council housing stock up to a 21st century quality. But you're right, what we didn't do things like build enough homes. We haven't built enough homes, and we've made a pledge now to build 1 million homes by 2020, 200,000 a year, and we're serious about that, and we need to build. That's what the government now needs to do, is start building, helps with issues around, you know, that we said about the bedroom tax and there not being enough houses. Once we've started building enough properties, you'll see that movement in people's sort of social status anyway. So I think Labour have got the answers to the issues that are happening now, but we've got to get in power, because if we have another 7 years of what we've got at the moment, where are we going to be in 2020?
Okay, let's take a short break. Let's do these. Phoenix FM, it's Wednesday the 27th of November. It's Mike with 123, joined in the studio by Mike Lasseff and Julie Morrissey for 123 this afternoon. Mike, you and I went out on the river, and Julie, I've never seen anybody enjoy herself so much. She absolutely loved it out on the river. Mike, one of the questions I asked you then was about your new constituency, Basel and East Thurrock, and I asked you then what people are asking you, what's happened in the week since we spoke.
Yeah, well, going back, it was only last week, wasn't it? Last Monday, Monday before last, we went out on the Thames, and Julie, you stayed outside the boat for most of it,
yeah,
didn't you?
I was so wrapped up like Mitchell in Manor, I'm not wasting this.
Well, you were, weren't you? But it was what a privilege to go out on the Thames and see the constituency from the river and to understand what a working river it is. It's absolutely fabulous. And I think, you know, it made me all the more adamant to make sure that all the great stuff that happens on the Thames and hopefully at the port will have a positive benefit and work for the residents of South Basildon and East Thurrock, especially the people living in East Tilbury and Corrinham and Stamford Lee Hope and all, you know, Greys and the rest of the Thurrock Authority. It was fabulous. I've been to DP World a couple of times, and as a, you know, logistically, their distribution park that's come in and understanding how, you know, freight travels around the world was absolutely fabulous, and they do a great job at what they do. But the issues that we've got are around the employment rights for the staff, and we'd like to see Unite being recognised by the
board. They've just tweeted, actually. They've just mentioned Unite. Us. Yeah, Unite London Gateway are on Twitter.
Excellent. Excellent. I think it's imperative because there are ports, they're in competition with each other for business, and we've got, you know, my whole campaign is about a level playing field for people, and if we don't have a level playing field for the workers at DP World alongside Tilbury and the other ports, then we're going to get problems as the economy does increase. And it's also about making sure that the jobs that are at the port, the majority or as many as possible, can be filled by local people. There's a lot of pain involved with the infrastructure, and there are improvements to the roads, but that, you know, there's been a lot of upheaval around the roads, especially in Stamford Lee Hope and Corrinham. We want people to be able to benefit as well as all the pain that they're going through. So I'm going back actually next week with a group of residents from East Tilbury to look at transport stuff, level crossing, always an issue in East Tilbury.
So are people talking to you about more local issues at the moment rather than national issues?
Well, it's both, really. I mean, I've got involved in a lot of local stuff, and I suppose it's because, you know, myself and Julie are local councillors, and we, you know, that's what we like doing. We like talking to local people, and a lot of it is about local issues. I've been involved in the fires that, well, not involved in the fires directly, but involved in helping people speak up about the fires and the damage that's been caused because of the current sort of safety issues at the council estates in Pitsea. Lots of issues, but also, I mean, the cost of living crisis and the bedroom tax and the way, you know, wages are not going up as fast as other bills.
See, that shocked me last night. I was watching London Tonight, and the new Olympic homes, the first resident moved into the Olympic homes, and her rent is £950 a week, and it's only for people really over £60,000 a year, and I'm thinking, I thought these were going to be for affordable housing. Now, perhaps that is affordable in London these days. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's gone out of my head, really.
No, and it's a shame, isn't it? Because it's got to be... I mean, it's like I was there through work a little while ago in the Olympic Park, and what's happening there is great. But again, it's a similar thing, really, isn't it? You know, a lot of investment, a lot of infrastructure changes. Is it going to benefit local people? And that's got to be, you know, as Labour candidates and councillors, we've got to be sticking up for working people that are earning, you know, average salaries. I work 3 days a week in London. My wages have been frozen last year, and the fares will go up on January the 6th, you know, to take a few more pounds a week out of your pocket. So I know exactly how people are feeling. But also getting involved in some great stuff that's going on. I'm really into electronic music of the 1980s, and Basildon is, of course, the home of the mighty Depeche Mode.
I interviewed them back in 1981.
Did you? Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's how old
I love
am,
it. Yeah. New Life. New Life, what a tune. Fabulous. But I'm a real Vince Clarke fan. We saw Erasure couple of years ago in Brighton.
Yeah.
Fabulous. On the 14th of December, I'm going to the Baz Christmas Bash that's organised by Baz Productions, which they celebrate electronic music, all the new bands that there are about and all the old stuff as well. So I'm really looking forward to that. And one of the other things that we did when I first got selected, on the advice of Baroness Angela Smith, was get involved with C&K Ladies Basildon Football Club. They play at the old Marconi Selex in Basildon. We're going there Sunday because we've got their first round FA Cup match, but we've been to a lot of games, and they've won a lot of games, so we're there lucky lucky mascots at the moment. Great. Unlike East Thurrock, who I haven't seen win yet.
Yeah, stay away, please. Yeah, Neil at the Inquirer would yeah, stay away, he said, he's helping. Julie, an article published locally on yourthurrock.com. Management sharing at Thurrock Council saves half a million pound, claims John Kent. That's something you've talked about in Brentwood, isn't it? Is it something you're doing, sharing management services to reduce costs?
Yeah, we are. And we're finding, although maybe on one level it saves costs or cuts costs down, on another level it can be more costly, because sometimes there's sometimes you have to repeat work you've already done because a new officer comes in, maybe, or what we're finding and what we spoke about to the peer review group yesterday was, if someone's heart isn't in Brentwood, whether they live in Brentwood or not, if their heart isn't in Brentwood and they've just popped over from Thurrock for a day, or they come over once a week for a day to Brentwood, if they're not bedded in and they don't really know, they don't walk, someone said to me, are they not walking the walk, they're not, you know, can they do the best for Brentwood? And I would question that, and I would think, I'd say no. I'm wondering if that is a cost saving measure. It may look good on a spreadsheet, but actually when you boil it down, is it saving money? Or if it is, maybe it's saving the council money, but is it saving Brentwood residents money?
Yeah, and our planning department is actually in disarray at the moment. There's so many applications waiting to go through. And why aren't we, well, you know, we didn't invest in our staff team. We could have been you know, selling our services, if you like, to other authorities if they've gone down the route of cutting them down. We seem to be the ones that I mean, it's great to have officers come over from Thurrock who do know what they're doing, but we shouldn't be in that position. You know, we haven't got enough planning officers to deal with what's going on at the moment. Morale is low because people have seen, they've taken out swathes of experienced staff, and we still got some great IT guys, haven't we, at Brentwood Council. We're good at laying on the lighting up events and things like that. You know, why aren't we expanding on that and offering those sort of services to other areas? We seem to be, you know,
we're the ones buying it in. We're the ones spending out the money. Someone's obviously, someone is providing that expertise. Why wasn't it us?
And the town hall didn't, you know, keeping the town hall didn't fit in with their vision of what a council would be, which is basically cutting it right down to the bone and just having a few people checking up on the contracts that have been outsourced to other people. So,
okay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, back in a second. It's just coming up to quarter to two.
Phoenix FM. 1-2-3 with Mike Jones.
Indeed it is. Thank you for all your comments so far, by the way. Mike, you've obviously met your opponent, Stephen Metcalfe, who's the current MP for the area. And Stephen will be invited into the studio in the very, very near future. And I'm sure you'd look forward to a healthy debate with him.
I'd love to be on with Stephen. That'd be great.
How, without getting personal, I mean, how is your relationship with Stephen?
I've met him very briefly on a couple of occasions, shook hands and said hello. He was I saw him at Stamford Fair when we had a street stall celebrating the NHS 65th birthday, and I saw him when he was in Corringham when we had a street stall promoting the energy price freeze.
I mean, both he and Jackie Doyle Price, the Thurrock MP, are both adamant about, very strong in their opinions about the Dartford crossing. Where are you on that?
Well, we're not, I mean, Option C, if Option C becomes the option that the government support, it's going to have a devastating effect on the residents of South Basset and East Thurrock, especially people living in Alsett, where it will just, you know, steamroll a massive road through our rural landscape. It will be dreadful. We support the council stance that none of the crossings should be considered until we look at the existing setup and going toll free, and trying to improve the situation. It seems incredible that they would even contemplate doing what they're doing with Option C. A few years ago, there were options to look at a crossing further east and coming up through around Canvey and picking up the 130 and going up the east of England that way, which seems, you know, a much more sensible option, as the roads were, you know, they're pretty much in place to deal with that. Bringing over a crossing that's going to cut across and pick up the M25, which is already horrendous, seems insane. But We'll see. They're supposed to have made a decision by now. We were expecting a decision. I don't know if they're going to. I don't know if they're going to kick it into the long grass and do a total bottle job until...
I've said before in this programme, why don't we just wait and see whether these new cameras work? You might get rid of all your queues and then you don't need a crossing.
Exactly. The tolls cause the congestion, so let's see, you know, when people can drive through and pay as they drive through, see what happens.
Talking and driving, I must say this, we do get things right in this country. I've just come back from Rome. I keep mentioning that part. The roads out there are just... I mean, Italians are supposed to be the best road builders in the world, and their motorways are fantastic. But Rome itself, it's just chronic. Mm. Have you seen the zebra crossing in Rome? It's just faint. They must have been painted 30 years ago, and there's like hardly any white lines. The rules are you just cross when you feel like it and take your life in your own hands. It's just horrendous. And you come back into England, and everything just seems neat and orderly. Mm. And Rome, to me, was scruffy, I thought. And I don't mean the ancient bits. I mean the normal bits, you know, the Brentwoods of just outside Rome, you know. I think we do get things right.
Yeah, but, I mean, currently our roads are not great, are they?
And well, we moan about
we could
potholes.
Be heading that way.
you want to see their potholes. Let's talk about the Labour leadership. You had the Labour leadership battle, was it 2 years ago now?
Was it
3 years ago now?
September.
You know, the Miliband brothers, etc.
Yeah.
A lot of people have said at the time that you as a party elected the wrong brother.
Mm.
What were your feelings at the time, and what do you think now?
Well, I'm delighted with the leader that we've got. I think he's done some great stuff. I mean, he's been really strong on things like taking on the press and the Murdochs in particular, when everyone else was you know... pulling away from that, and even as you say, you know, some of the things that we may have done wrong in the past was we were too chummy with that lot, and I'm glad that he's made the stance he has. We was at the regional conference on last weekend in Luton, and Kelvin Hopkins, who's the MP for Luton North, made a great statement about Ed Miliband's stance on Syria, because he put the brakes on that. We might be at war with Syria if Ed Miliband hadn't put the brakes on and said he wasn't going to support us going gung-ho with the Americans into Syria. And since then, we've had, you know, everything that's happened since then is because of that decision. And now it looks like there's some stability there. So I'm delighted. We're very supportive of Ed Miliband. He was there Friday night, actually. He was great. Ed Balls as well. So... very happy with our leadership. We have got to get the message out there. Our members are happy. The people that meet Ed Miliband and have a good conversation with him, and he's great, the Q&As at conference, but also when he's out on his soapbox. We saw him in Brighton, didn't we, at the conference on the Saturday morning. We've got to get that across to everybody, and hopefully, you know, that's the job for next year, is making sure people understand what he's all about. He's a good guy. He's, you know, I'm not interested in the, you know, the TV presence and the personality. You've got to, you know, it's something to do with it, but I'm more interested in the policy.
Finally, should you be elected? Are mm-hmm. you ready? I mean, we live in a world, this is a bit of an awkward question really, but we live in a world where social media is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you publish anything, there's normally a comment section, and people write exactly what they want to write, whether it be on Twitter or Facebook or everything. Are you ready for some of the abuse,
it is personal abuse.
Are you, Julie? Are you ready for some of the things that people might say about Mike, however unfair they are, or demeaning, or nasty? I mean,
we get it already.
We do get some already. I don't think we've had. I don't think we've experienced anything like what is likely. We're likely to experience. I don't think you can ever be ready for it, but we do have strategies. We've worked out some strategies for dealing with it. And
don't feed the trolls.
Don't feed the trolls.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
As soon as you engage with someone who started giving you a bad time, they love
hard.
It. So you just get dragged into it. Yeah.
So you ignore it. Then. I mean, you're a staunch user of Twitter, both of you.
Yeah.
And I And I think it's a really good media.
Yeah.
And if you ignore the people who are abusing you, then...
We went out with the Labour group in Langdon Hills a few weeks ago, and someone who is you know, a regular insulter on Twitter, and you know, if it went too far, obviously you would have to step in, but I mean, this was borderline, saying that Labour group look like why do a Labour group always, when they're out on the street, always look like a bunch of sex offenders? Disgraceful. Wow. Absolutely disgraceful. But I've never responded to that on Twitter.
No.
Never will.
No.
You know, it's appalling, but, you know, that's pretty near the mark, isn't it?
Okay, one criticism I have heard levelled at you before is that you may be far a little bit too much the left, that you have addressed people in the past as comrade. Do you think... Are you going to drop that, or do you think...
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm delighted. I mean, I think, press-wise, I think the Gazette give us a fair crack, and we get supported with some of the stuff we do. I think they're quite, even-handed. They do always insist on, when they quote me, calling me a self-confessed socialist.
Right,
which
okay.
I'm very proud of, Mike.
Okay,
They've got no problem
enough.
With that at all.
That's fair enough. Okay, final question. You must be devastated, as I was, the result on Sunday of the Manchester... Mike and I are both Spurs reporters. Supporters, not reporters. We'll talk about that off here.
Yeah.
Both of you, thank you very much for coming
Thanks,
in.
Mike.
We're obviously going to talk to you many times before the actual event, and we look forward to you coming in very soon again.
Yeah, right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Mike.
My thanks to Mike and Julie, and back to some music.
Even if I part.